episode of the Sailing Road Podcast, we review our week-long trip to Key Largo and Isle Mirada in the Florida Keys. We'll cover the sailing news, and our featured product provides a safe and inexpensive way to get from your anchored boat to shore. All that and more on the Sailing Road. Welcome to The Sailing Road, the podcast about everything sailing, from coastal and lake cruising to global offshore cruising. My name is Steve Payment, and I am joined by the girl who owns more bikinis than shoes, my beautiful girlfriend, Brandi Bryant.
Yeah, hello everybody. That is a very, very true statement to what can a girl say? When you have a lot of time on a boat, you need a lot of bikinis. Hey.
You've got a lot of bikinis. You have more bikinis than all of the shoes in the household, three people combined, and then probably triple that.
Are you complaining?
No, I love the bikinis.
Okay, then.
I'm not complaining at all. I think the bikinis are great. But you do have a lot of bikinis. I guess it makes sense being on a boat all the time.
Bikinis are cheaper than, well, I can't say that. Not all my bikinis are cheaper than shoes. I'll take that back.
The problem is they just keep showing up.
I don't know how.
I don't know either.
I don't know. It's the bikini fairy.
Put a block on your PC and iPhone that you can't order bikinis.
Can't search bikinis.
Exactly. Cannot search bikini in Google. We've got a couple things, good things coming up in the sailing travels. We are getting ready this weekend to travel over to one of our favorite spots, which is the Tampa Bay down south to Sarasota and do some sailing.
Not so far south, but the Longboat Key area is usually where we like to really hang out, the Cortez area. Yeah. Hopefully Christian is going to be participating and hanging out with us this weekend. Unfortunately, my 18-year-old has a job, and I don't think he asked for the proper days off. So hopefully he'll wake up Saturday morning and drive over and at least spend 2 days with us. But we'll see. If not, then it'll be a weekend on the boat.
Yeah, and hopefully we'll get some good winds, actually get to sail a little bit more. I know that if we go down into Sarasota Bay, which we usually do, take a little trip down through there, there's usually some good winds, or even go offshore out through one of the inlets right there at Longboat. There's a nice inlet. And it is really, we'll talk about it when we get back, it's just one of our favorite spots. Great water, great sailing area. So we're looking forward to that. And then we've been really working on upgrading all of the trailer and truck equipment. First thing I did is I got new tires on the truck. They were the same tires that I've had on the truck for probably 4 years now. And whereas I don't drive the truck a lot, they really weren't getting totally worn out. They were getting a little bit cracked. And was as much trailering as we do, I did not want to risk that. So I went and got new tires for the truck. And then we're dropping off the trailer when we get over to Tampa to the trailer dealer that we bought it from. And they're going to put on a second set of axle brakes.
Yes, it was had a little bit of a scare the last time we had the boat out. It was raining almost the entire trip, and of course raining back when we were heading home. And of course cars don't pay attention when you have a boat trailering behind you, and we had to slam on the brakes, and it was a little bit of a slow stop. So extra brakes sounds like a plan.
Yes. So that's when I first ordered the trailer, because our old trailer didn't have any brakes and the boat's about the same weight, I thought, well, we only need really one axle of brakes. And I've learned since then that the new trailer is heavier than the old trailer. And I think the new boat with everything on it, it's a little bit heavier. And it just makes more sense, as much as we trailer, to have that second set of brakes. And then I'm also adding a brake controller, which will definitely help it stop faster. So we're looking forward to get all that done so that we can get ready for our big trip at the end of the month, which we're going down to all the way to Key West, over 400 miles away from home. Our longest distance we've done in the past is down to Key West, and we're doing it again to go to Fantasy Fest, which, if anybody's not familiar with Fantasy Fest, it is one of the biggest Halloween parties in the United States.
Google it.
Full week-long Halloween party, a lot of fun, a lot of great bands, a lot of great music, and just
lots of costumes. Yeah. We have costumes for every day of the week. It's quite exciting.
Absolutely. So we're going to have fun with that. And other than that, we're the podcast, just to let everybody know, we've got a couple great interviews lined up. We're just trying to coordinate schedules. I've been contacting a number of people to talk to. And so we're looking forward to pulling those together. It's just a matter of coordinating schedules between our work schedules and when they're available. And that's always a challenge. I'm finding it's the whole podcast has become a bit of a challenge, just trying to figure out how to fit it in with work schedules and doing everything at night and on the weekends. But we're working out, and we're looking forward to getting some additional interviews on some people that I've been really interested in talking to and followed for a while. So I think you guys will like that. So after a quick break, we'll be back to talk about our longest cruise that we've done to date, which was 6 days, or actually 6 nights, that we spent in the Florida Keys last December. So we'll be right back. Okay, we're back, and we are going to talk about our featured topic this week, which was our week-long trip that we took last December down to the Key Largo and Almirada area in the Florida Keys. And this was, I think that was the first time, well, it was the second time we'd been to the Florida Keys. We went to Key West once before, but this was the first time in that Key Largo, Almirada area. And it was actually our longest trip, being 6 nights. I think the longest we had done before that was probably 4 nights. So a little bit different preparation. We were, you know, kind of wondering what it would be like to spend 6 days on a 26-foot boat. Almost 7 days, 6 nights. And the result was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, just the same as if it was 4 nights. I mean, we just packed a little heavier at times with food, but then we thought, no, we don't need to pack heavier with food.
Well, I think when we learned that even after that many nights, we were still having fun. We still would have kept going. So just kind of give a summary. We start the trip. So we live in the Orlando, Florida area. So the Key Largo and Almirada are about 315 miles away from us. So we always have to consider, you know, the amount of time on the road and traveling and how much gas we're going to spend.
And the Miami traffic.
Yeah, absolutely. But when you factor it all together, it actually works out pretty good. So we left and went down to the actually Tavernier area. It's in between Key Largo and Almirada. And we found it's kind of interesting. In the Keys, because it's so compact and there's not a lot of room, one of the issues you have when you take a boat down on a trailer is a place to store your trailer. And a lot of people with center console fishing boats and friends of mine, they'll rent a house that comes with a dock and a place to store the trailer. But if you don't have a place to store the trailer, you can't store it at any of the public ramps or anything like that. So you have to find a private marina. So we found this marina that I think was fantastic. The location, everything worked out great. It's called Boatman's Mangrove Marina in Tavernier, and they were just really helpful. In fact, they stayed a little late. We were running late getting down there that day, and they stayed a little bit late, and because the ramp actually gets locked at night, they kept the ramp open for us. They put our truck and trailer behind a fenced gate and locked it up because we said we wouldn't.
Yeah, that was really nice of them.
Yeah, we weren't going to need it the whole trip, so they just put it away for us and worked out great.
Got it out of their way, so.
And there's an Ace Hardware like a block away from there. I forget what it was. We forgot. We had to go run into Ace to get something. So it's just a really convenient location to get started with the trip. And it's really centrally located. As we worked out the trip, we didn't realize how well it was going to be. But during the trip, we went south for a while and then back north and then kind of ended back right back in the center where Boatman's is. So that worked out really well. So we got down kind of late afternoon, evening. I mean, they were staying open late just for us.
Yeah, barely staying open for us.
And so we didn't have much time. We wanted to just get anchored somewhere because we're not that familiar with that area of the Keys. And right off of the shore of Boatman's Marina is our small harbor called Community Harbor. And there's a number of boats permanently anchored out there, some moored. And so we just went right out and anchored in the harbor just to get settled for the night and really, you know, kind of get a lay for land, figure out where we want to go the next day.
Well, it was just a long trip. So just to get anchored and relax and have the mast up and relax, it was definitely much needed because coming into the Keys, we had terrible traffic and that's what actually took us so long. So just the drive and constant stop and go, we were ready to relax and anchor.
So we went out and got anchored, and I think it's a bit of a challenge to get anchored in that harbor. We found out it's a combination of grass and mud.
Oh, it was awful.
Which is never good to anchor in. So I think it took us 3 or 4 tries to find a good spot to get the anchor down and felt that we were secure. And so then we crashed for the night. And I think at some point during the night, it was probably 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning.
At least.
Our anchor alarm went off. And we haven't really talked about it on the show yet, but we anchor out more than we're at a slip, probably 10 times anchored out for every time we're in a slip. So one of the things we did early on, Brandy was always up half the night looking out the windows, making sure we were in the same place.
Yeah, my third eye is always seeing where we're located.
She was very nervous about anchoring, that we were going to drag and end up crashing into something. So I started using an anchor alarm. We run it on our iPhones, and actually we run it on both of our iPhones just to have a backup. And we have the iPhones powered up all night. And I'll put a link for the one we use. I forget the exact name of the one we use. But it just gives a real another sense of security at night when you're anchored, that you haven't moved past where you started. And the anchor alarm I use even has a allow swing into it. You can calculate all that in, change of tides, and has different circle links that you can put depending on how tight of anchorage it is.
Gives me a little peace of mind.
Yeah, but it really did. It worked good. It woke us up at 3 a.m. We had to re-anchor. I think
that was the first time we've ever had to re-anchor in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
I still don't think we've ever had to re-anchor in the middle of the night.
No, not since then. And I think actually what I did, even when we re-anchored, because we were having a hard time getting it to hold again, is I just bought a plow anchor. That's the other thing. We have two different types of anchors on the boat. We have a Fortress that's our primary anchor that we use almost all the time to anchor out. And we never had any problem. We don't drag, even in changing currents and things where we shift in the middle of the night. I mean, the anchor alarm gives us a backup, but we've never had it drag on us. Mm-mm. And so in this case, we swapped it out with the plow anchor, and the plow anchor somehow did better with the mud and the grass. So, and then, I mean, the anchor held for the rest of the night. So we were fine. It's always something you have to think about when you're anchoring, that whether or not you're going to move. And in some cases, you're just going to get woken up. And that was the anchor alarm did what it was supposed to. So the next day we got up and we decided to go south and cruise out the Whale Harbor Bridge, which is Whale Harbor Channel just south of there. I think it was just a couple miles south. But the thing we learned about the Keys, and we never really thought about, is there's really no drawbridges in the Keys. There are bridges that are 65 feet that most masks can get under, or there's very short bridges.
Yeah, very short bridges.
And it was one of the trips that really taught us the advantage of our boat having a mast and a mast raising system that makes it very easy to take up and down. We put the mast raising system on, and we were able to take down the mast to go into this bridge, and the Whale Harbor Bridge, I think, is 10 feet. And we were able to put the mast down into its cradle and easily go back underneath it.
I think it's 18, because we're higher than 10 feet.
No, we're not 10 feet off the water with the mast down.
You don't think so?
No.
Oh, all right. What do I know?
So we got underneath there, and right under the reason we were going out underneath the bridge there is there's a big sandbar out there, and a lot of people hang out on the weekends.
Beautiful, and, beautiful spot.
You know, just great, great water, real clear, nice sandbar. So we went out. We needed to pick up some ice from marina, but then we saw at the marina there was a tiki bar, and I'd read about there was a number of tiki bars in the area, and we're kind of fans of tropical tiki bars. So we said, well, let's pull up the dock here.
Somewhere.
Yeah, and we hadn't had any tropical drinks yet, so we stopped and had a rum runner or a pina colada or something like that at the bar.
Rum
just check it out.
Rum runner is my drink of choice.
And it was actually, that's the Holiday Isle tiki bar. That was the first tiki bar we stopped at, and it was a really sharp spot. It was really pretty, right on the water, just gorgeous. So then we went out to the, after we got done with our drinks, went out to the sandbar and anchored for a little bit with all the other boaters. And there was probably, I think this was during the week, and there was probably 30 boaters out there sitting.
Yeah, quite a few.
I mean, it was a holiday week. This was between Christmas and New Year's. But it was funny because, and we've experienced this in the past, when we have our mast down, so we pull up the sandbar and we anchor, and the mast is down in its cradle. And we got up on the front of the boat, got our folding chairs out, our little deck chairs, and just sat on the front of the boat and we're enjoying a beer or something. And I don't know, we must have had 5 or 6 people come by and say,
you guys all right? Your mast broke? What happened?
What's wrong? How'd you break your mast? You know, so I don't know if they were serious, but there was a couple we knew they were serious. It's like,
I think they're dead serious. I don't think they realize that a sailboat, the mast is capable of going up and down. So
I think it shows you how many people have no idea how a sailboat works. And the fact that we can put our mast up and down. So we'd have to explain to people, we just put it down to get underneath the bridge. And we left it down because we knew we were just going to be going right back underneath the bridge again. So it was just funny that we get that comment often when we've got it laying down.
Very convenient.
So we hung out in the sandbar for a little while. And then we decided to go back in and find a place to anchor for the night after the afternoon. We went back through the bridge, put our mast back up, and we had left all the mast raising system on. And we realized that we were just going to leave it on for the rest of the weekend because we had to go underneath a number of bridges back and forth when going from the inside of the Keys out to the ocean side. And then we went south of there and found a place to anchor off of Lorelei Cabana Bar and Restaurant, which was Tiki Bar number 2.
Yeah.
There, you can see there's a theme here that we've come up with. We just started figuring out we'd tour all the tiki bars, but they were also great anchorages right off the tiki bar.
Absolutely.
So this was a really nice anchorage, very protected spot just off the shore from this tiki bar or the cabana bar at Lorelei. And this is probably the one place that everybody talks about in the Keys as just being the quintessential tropical bar in the Keys. And so we got settled at anchored and rowed into Lorelei on our dinghy. And they have a nice little landing beach. And the minute you pull up, it just puts you into that tropical vacation mode. It was just, it's an absolute gorgeous spot.
Sandy beach outside. It's got music playing. You have an outside bar. You have outside tables. You have even, I think they even have an inside area where you could sit inside if you wanted to sit inside. But we never sit inside. We love the outside areas.
But they got, somebody's always playing in their kind of band shell, acoustic guitar or band. And it's just a fantastic spot. And so we sat there and had a couple drinks and then had dinner there and just watched the sun go down. It is one of the best spots to watch a sunset. The place was just packed. People were just flipping pictures like crazy of the sunset. And so we really enjoyed it and had a great night there listening to the music. It was just a perfect start to the vacation and really feeling at home in the Keys. So we settled into the anchorage that night, and then the next day we went a little bit further south from there, and before we were going to go out snorkeling that day, but I saw on the map something I want to check out is there's a Bass Pro Shops right on the water in the Keys, just south of Lorelei, right in the channel along the shoreline, and it's a Worldwide Sports Bass Pro Shops, a more offshore fishing style. But the really cool thing about the store, and it's worth a stop, even if you're driving through the Keys, stop there, is that in the middle of the store, they have a sister ship to Ernest Hemingway's famous fishing boat, Pilar. And you'll see in the videos we post with this episode of everything in the store and the pictures of the boat. But I guess this fishing boat he went on a trip on this specific boat in 1933, and he enjoyed it so much and loved the boat so much that he ordered one and had one made the next year for $7,500. He had this boat made. But it is just gorgeous old wooden fishing boat. Real, it's completely restored, sitting in the middle of the store. Just really cool to see. And you can get up and walk into it and see the living quarters. It's just a really cool setup and presentation that they have. And the whole store was decorated for the holidays, even the boat. So that was really cool. And while we were there, we realized, too, we were using the dinghy all week, and we had previously lost our mushroom anchor.
Oh, that's right.
Our mushroom anchor for the dinghy, so we're
constantly tying it off.
It was convenient, because we bought a mushroom anchor. So we got done there, and our plan that day was to go snorkeling out at Alligator Reef, which is about 4 miles offshore. And so just a little bit further south of the Bass Pro Shops there's another channel and a set of bridges. There's 3 different bridges, all different heights, but they're all pretty low. And that's another bridge. It was the Teetable Key Channel Bridge. And that was another 10-foot clearance bridge. So after the first day of taking down the mast and putting it back up, we get pretty practiced at it. And that time we, because we were going to go out to snorkel and we didn't want to leave the mast down offshore, we just took it down, went underneath the bridge, put it right back up again. Didn't even really slow down. We just, you know, idled for a few minutes and had it back up, probably 2 minutes down and 2 minutes back up. So worked out great. We were getting very practiced at going underneath bridges and taking it down. We've actually thought in the future of just doing that when we're going down the intercoastal, not having to wait on bridges to open. So we got outside and I checked the weather before we'd went out, and it didn't say that there was much of a swell, but we got out and there was quite a swell. It was probably a 3 foot, you know, anywhere from 2 to 3 to maybe even 4 foot swell.
Yeah, it was pretty bouncy.
And so it wasn't bad motoring out to the, we were going right to the wind, so we couldn't sail. So we kind of motored out to the Alligator Reef about 4 miles. And by the time we got out there, the swell was moving pretty good. And there was a couple snorkeling boats out on the reef, but it was just because of how much waves were coming through, it wasn't going to be very comfortable to snorkel.
No, not at all.
But since we had made the trip, we were going to try it anyway. And I went down.
It was like a challenge.
Yeah, I went down below to grab the snorkel equipment, something else that we probably should have done before we got into a little bit of a choppy sea. And within minutes of digging for the snorkeling equipment out of some cabinet in our boat, started getting seasick. And by the time I got up above, I was feeling pretty green.
You were pale and not happy.
Not feeling good at all. And so I immediately said, I got to get in the water just to get rid of the seasickness, because I knew the minute I started swimming, I'd be fine. So I hopped in the water with my snorkeling gear and was just getting stable when the incident happened.
Yeah, I was trying to give him everything that he needed and make sure he was good to go so that he could start feeling better. And as I was giving him all of the stuff, our captain's seat is one of those seats that flips up and you have to clip it to the rail behind it so that it doesn't move. Well, somebody not thinking and not feeling well went straight into the water and lifted it, and I didn't pay attention to it, whether it was locked or not, and the boat hit a wave, but rocked with the wave, and I went one way, it came the other direction, and the seat just slammed me in the back of my, I think it was my right ear, and I basically almost blacked out. I remember putting my hands down and trying to get my wits about myself, and I almost blacked out completely. So I sat down and now I have issues. He has issues in the water. He's like, oh, shoot, let me get up in the boat and see if you're all right. So he had to get up into the boat and we just looked at each other and was like, yeah, let's just go back.
It was not good. That's probably about 30 pounds of fiberglass.
Oh, it hurts so
bad. It's a big seat on a hinge, and it just, if it's flying over, I've gotten hit by it before just not paying attention and didn't have it all the way up in it. So yeah. You paid the price for that one. So at that point, we said, you know what? Snorkeling is not in our cards today.
I attempted to put a snorkel mask on, and it was, because it has to be tight, and it just hurt the back of my ear so bad that it was just time to go.
Yeah, so we called it in. We had just a nice little cruise out to Alligator Reef.
It was beautiful, though. If you ever have a chance to go out to Alligator Reef, the whole general area looked like it was going to be absolutely beautiful. Beautiful water.
We've seen pictures of it when it's calm.
It looked like a pretty decent sized reef, and, you know, it just wasn't the right day at the right time.
Right. So we decided that was enough, and we'd pack it in and head back in. So we, after that challenging day, rather than trying to find another anchorage, and we had such a great time at the Lorelei the night before, we just pretty much motored straight back to the Lorelei, anchored, and rode back up to the beach and drowned our challenging
our
day in a couple rum runners or something, and just put it behind us. So that was it for that day. And so the next day we got up and we decided to hit a different area. So we headed back north towards Key Largo. And
I think we sailed pretty much all the way back up when we headed back to Key Largo that day.
Absolutely.
I remember going through the channel and everything. We had the sails up and had good wind.
Yeah, the nice thing with the east breezes coming in pretty much all the way up and down the Keys there, as long as it's not being blocked by land, you're getting pretty good breezes. So we were motor sailing a lot, but we were still had the sails full pretty much the whole time. So we headed back up north, and our plan was we were going to stay up towards Key Largo for New Year's Eve because they have a big fireworks show. And this was a couple days before New Year's Eve, and we figured that if we got up there, we could find actually a slip to stay in. And that way we'd be right on shore and comfortable and easy to get on and off the boat and go around to the different places that were having New Year's Eve parties. And so we sailed up there, and the first place we stopped was this place called the Upper Keys Sailing Club. And this is a really neat little sailing club. Kind of reminds me of my sailing club growing up, just very much smaller scale, but very casual in the Florida Keys. We pulled up, and there was just a couple people around, and we started...
There was probably about, what, 30 boats? 20 boats, maybe, at the docks? They had about
20, 30 slips. And I had read where they actually do transient slips for it's a buck a night. And if you don't want to use a slip, then you can just anchor off their shore, and they charge $5 to land the dinghy and like $1 to take a shower in their showers. So we walked up and started talking to a couple members, and it turned out that it was Tuesday and Wednesday, which is when the dock master, the club manager, is off. And so they had no idea how to rent us a slip. And then we found out that the other problem with the slip is they lock the whole place up at night. So you, unless you're a member, you can't get in and out of the gate. So you're kind of locked behind a fence.
And we're not okay with that.
Yeah, we wanted to walk up to a restaurant. And I think it would be fine on the weekend because the club members are always around and they're late. But on a midweek, they were all going to be leaving by 8 o'clock. And we don't want to be locked in. But the nice thing was the member said, you know, hey, just use the showers. Don't worry about it. I think I gave them like $10, and I said, hey, well, here's a donation to the club. And really nice showers.
Yeah, it was a cool little outside shower.
Yeah, well, actually, it was an outside shower. Yeah. But so we just showered up, and then they recommended that we go just next door to there, to the back to the south, is Sunset Cove. And so we just...
It was a great spot.
Yeah, just pulled down there.
Quite a few people anchored out there, too.
And there was a couple restaurants right off of there, too. So we pulled up, we anchored, got settled for the night, and we actually ended up at our next tiki bar, which was the Bayside Grill, which I looked up and actually is known for the Key Largo as having some of the best food. It's a husband and wife team.
And the best sunsets right there.
Yeah, gorgeous sunset. They have a nice little tiki bar downstairs. Everybody comes out. Once again, you could tell when you're in a spot that everybody comes to watch the sunsets because it's around 5 o'clock. It just starts getting packed. But we got you have to see the videos that we put up with this episode and the pictures, because the sunsets from this spot were just, it was our best of our whole trip. They were just fantastic. And just the weather every night made for a perfect sunset. So we had a fantastic dinner at the grill, sat at the tiki bar talking with different boaters and sailors.
It's always fun talking to the local cruisers that are in the area, you know, whether they're there permanently or whether they're just kind of passing through. It seems like everywhere we go, there's always somebody to talk to and hear their different stories.
And then you'll also see in the video that we'll post, it was a kind of a famous video with our friends and family that we posted while we were in the Keys, of us at the end of the night rowing back out to the boat, and we were just joking.
Everybody took us very seriously.
That, you know, you start, and if you've ever done this, when it's dark, and there was almost no moon out, so you get in your dinghy and you start rowing out, and all you can see are these little blips of white light. And it was a fairly crowded anchorage. There's probably 50, 60 boats out there. And we knew approximately where we were, you know, straight off shore, off of this restaurant. But we did a video. We were joking that, see all those little blips out there? Those are all sailboats. We have no idea which one ours. So we got all these posts back from friends and family on Facebook. Did you find your boat? Were you all right? You're lost? But I think any...
You can see more than what they thought we could see, that's for sure.
Any sailor that's tried to find their boat in the dark can relate, especially after you've had a few drinks at the tiki bar.
Thing about us is that we row everywhere. We don't even have a motor on our dinghy, so we just kind of row along, and we slowly find where we're going. Yeah,
you're not
going to hurt anybody.
You're going to fly past your boat or run into anybody fast while we're rowing. So that was it for that night. And then the next day was New Year's Eve. So we were planning to actually move up to Key Largo, which was the next bay over, and spend the night there. But we were talking to some folks in the bar the night before, and they said, you do not want to be anchored anywhere over there. Just stay here, because all the fireworks just put soot all over your boat. People have had their sails and sail covers damaged. So it was good advice. We just decided to come back there and anchor. But we did want to go up to Key Largo and check out. There's a kind of a restaurant bar area up there, and figure we just it was a nice little sail up through the intercoastal and the channel there.
It was a good little, probably a couple hour.
Yeah, it took us probably 2-3 hours to get up there.
So that was nice.
So we went up and we had lunch at this really fantastic Mexican place.
Mexican restaurant on New Year's Eve. It was Margaritas.
What was it called? It was Señor Frijoles.
Oh, that's right. Name of it.
Señor Frijoles. Great, great Mexican food. And then another
parking's not easy though.
Yeah, another tiki bar there, which this one has taken the sunset theme to the whole new level. They've got all these tables and stuff set out to watch the sunset, and it's actually called Sundowners. So we actually stopped there. So that was tiki bar number 4 of our tiki bar tour of Key Largo, but really nice place too. And that we'd read that they have fantastic food, but we did not eat there. So then we knew that we wanted to get back and settled in the anchorage for New Year's Eve. And so we just kind of motorsailed back down and went back to Sunset Cove by Bayside and anchored essentially exactly the same spot we did the night before.
Yeah, we actually, whenever we got back to that cove area, we got back before sunset and ended up just having sundowners on the boat. Took showers and got cleaned up because we kind of got a little extra cleaned up since it was New Year's Eve night, and had a few drinks on the front of the boat and took some pictures. And yeah, I think then I don't remember where we ate dinner for New Year's Eve.
I think we rode back into Bayside and we sat at the tiki bar and talked to the bartender for a while and got some recommendations.
Oh, that's where we got the recommendations for the next day. Yeah.
Well, before we did that, I think we went over to, across the street, across to A1A, is a place called Sharky's Pub that has live music. A little bit more of a locals place, but we took a walk and chucked it out. So that was, I guess we could count that as tiki bar number 5. And had a drink there and then came back over. I actually think we had dinner at this place called Snook's Bayside, which is right next to, it's like 2 doors down from Bayside Grill. And it was, it's a really nice spot too. Great music, very tropical feel.
Kind of Miami-like.
Yeah, it kind of had more of a South Beach, a little bit more upscale than Bayside, but that was a great spot too. And I think we stayed there most of the night and watched the fireworks and listened to the music. At some point late in the night, I know we went back over to Bayside because we were sitting at the tiki bar talking to some other sailors about where we want to go the next day. And the bartender overheard us, and she actually said that we should just go straight offshore, just go straight off of where the restaurant is out into Flora Bay to this the set of keys called the Nest Keys. And the other sailor that was with us, he had a full keel, 5.5 foot draw boat. And he goes, oh, I could never go out there. It's way too shallow. But with our boat,
benefit of our boat,
yeah, we draw 2 feet with everything up. And we said, well, we'll give it a try. And so New Year's Day, we took off after we recovered a bit in the morning from our festivities the night before.
And let me just say real fast, that was probably the best fireworks show that we had ever seen, because we actually were on the boat for New Year's Eve. At stroke of midnight, we could see fireworks from the North Key Largo almost all the way south as far as we could see. And it was just tons of them. So that was neat.
Yeah. It was just a fun, very memorable New Year's Eve, to spend it on the boat and enjoy it on the water. So we got up the next day and decided to take this trip out to Florida Bay. And if you get a chance, after you listen to the podcast, just do a Google Maps of Florida Bay right off of north of Key Largo, northwest, and you'll see how blue-green it is. Green, I guess, is more of the color.
It's gorgeous.
It is just this greenest color, but it is very, very shallow in most areas. And so it's very hard to get to on a sailboat, especially. But we actually did not see less than 3 feet all the way out to the Ness Key. Now, I think I pretty much timed it to be at high tide the whole time we were out there. But we kind of sailed out and...
Yeah, we got a good sail.
It was pretty much downwind, directly downwind out to the Ness Key. And we must have stayed there. We had lunch there and just swam around in the water. It was just a gorgeous day. I mean, there wasn't a cloud in the sky. Really, really nice day. And there was other people out there. Other boats,
but definitely not a lot. It wasn't a crowded spot at all.
No, there was only a few people out. And one of the things with the other thing you need to know about the Florida Bay and the keys in that area, most of these uninhabited keys, you were not allowed to step on the key itself. And the park rangers patrol in boats and make sure nobody's going on. They want to protect the habitat. So there's only a few areas that they actually allow people to land on the islands. And North Ness Key is one of those. They actually allow camping. There's some campsites there. There's a porta potty. And that, I saw some people with tents set up out there that had took their motorboats out and just camping for the weekend. So great place, I guess, to spend New Year's out there. So we spent the day there, and then it was going to be our last night on the water.
Yeah, we actually, when we left there, I think that was probably one of our best sails too of that week, was leaving that island and going back down south. Because remember that whole mm-hmm. Bay Area, we did it seemed like just a whole straight shot of
Great winds offshore. So we went down and we anchored just off of Butternut Key, which if you're looking at a map, and I'll put all this in the video and the maps, but it's pretty much just northwest of where we started.
Oh my gosh, Community Cove. Sorry to cut you off. Do you remember when we were going to that island? And I think I was driving or steering, whatever you want to call it. And I said, oh my gosh, look how shallow that is in front of us. I think we might need to turn around. Mm-hmm. And the water is so clear down there, and it's such white sand that it literally probably 50 yards in front of us looked like it was like 3 inches deep. And we pulled it up on our map real fast and made sure, but it was
about
4 to 6 feet all the way through.
It was just a white sandbar.
The way that the sun was hitting it, and I guess the distance that we were at, I was freaking out. I was like, oh my gosh, look, what, we need to turn around.
Yeah, normally you can tell the difference between the dark water and the brighter water, and it was deceiving.
A little intimidating.
So all that whole area is very, very shallow. So you have to be very careful leaving the channel. And we really had to watch as we were navigating around. Yeah, I thought maybe
that our GPS wasn't picking up a sandbar or something, because it looked huge.
But we did not ground ourselves once that entire weekend.
So, no, we did.
Which is great for us. Ta-da! Surprisingly, we didn't mangle the dagger board once again. So that was it. We had a very quiet night at Butternut Key and just had it all to ourselves. There wasn't a single other boat around, and just really gorgeous sunset once again. We could not beat the weather on this trip. It was unbelievable. Every night was clear nights.
Not a cloud in sight the entire time.
Nice breezes. So we were just very lucky. So then we packed it up the next morning. We motored back into Community Cove to Boatman's.
I think we went ahead and put the mast down right there, didn't we?
Yeah.
Yeah, we put the mast down where we were anchored at Butternut. Butternut, is that what you're calling it?
That might have been when we started the process of saying, why are we putting the mast down on the trailer? Let's do it on the water while we're still enjoying ourselves.
Well, the marina itself was just, if you remember the marina, a lot of it was trees. So I don't think we really could put...
That's true.
I know when we came in, we had to put the mast up when we actually got into the harbor, so...
Yeah, it's a tight ramp. There might have been some power lines over there, so we've got used to just doing it on the water. It's not a big deal.
It's a better scenery.
So we pulled back into Boatman's, picked up our truck and trailer, and made the long 300-mile drive home. But we definitely left with smiles on our face. This was just another one of those trips. So every day was fantastic.
Smiles on our face and a bruise on our head.
Yeah, it's true. It wasn't without injury. There's always an injury.
There is never a boating trip without me hurting, or not necessarily hurting, just somehow whacking a leg or getting a bruise. I am that. And I'm not clumsy. I don't think I'm clumsy anyway, but when we're on the boat, somehow I damaged myself.
Well, as long as it was something that would heal quick, we were fine.
Yeah, it was fun while I was doing it.
Absolutely. So I think that to sum up the trip, it was, we could not have beat also the anchorages we had. The nice thing about that area is that the prevailing winds coming from the east you're pretty much always in a protected area mm-hmm. as you pull up to these tiki bars and other places up toward shore. So every night,
it was calm.
It was
calm
like
as can be.
Sleeping in our bed at home. Yeah. There was no crazy rocking and just super comfortable. So we slept great on the boat. And we spent all 6 nights at anchor. We'd actually planned on probably spending a couple nights in the slip. But the other thing I learned in that area is there's very few transient slips available. They're very hard to find. There's
not
many
available.
Who needs
a slip when you have that beautiful water that you can just sit in?
It was, and that was a great thing. It proved to us we spent, you know, a 6-day vacation and never paid for a slip. And that was great. So when we add it all up, after 6 nights at anchor, we really didn't use much of the food at all that we packed because we were pretty much finding a tiki bar.
And food in our boat, I don't know if you're ever curious of this, breakfast for us, I'm not a breakfast person. So I might have a pastry if I'm lucky. Usually coffee is my breakfast or a cup of orange juice. Steve is a cereal guy, so he'll have cereal or we might splurge. A lot of times I'll fry up some bacon beforehand and put it in baggies and throw it in the cooler. So we'll have bacon and eggs and maybe some potatoes. But that's basically our breakfast. And then lunch is usually sandwiches or maybe sausages. But nothing really too big on lunch because we have usually a big dinner. Yeah. I think dinner is usually our go-to food. So either we do a tiki bar somewhere or we'll do what is called our famous boat chicken that we learned from a friend. It's just chicken thighs with, it's called Caribbean jerk. Marinade. So we have that and we'll do salad or vegetables. But we're pretty easy with food on the boat.
I think on this trip, though, we probably only cooked dinner maybe twice all the other nights. If that, maybe we did more because it's kind of the holidays, too. And we just kind of felt like splurging and going out and
enjoying
ourselves.
Well, it was a new place. And we like to see the new different types of tiki bars in the cities. And we like the fun spots.
It's good. So just to kind of sum up the cost of the trip and the distances, so we did 62 miles on the water. We burned about 8 gallons of gas on the boat. We did 630 miles on the road. And the combination of the gas in the truck and the boat ended up costing right around $265. We spent about $40 in ice to keep our food and beer cold. And so that totals up to about $300 for 6 days of cruising.
That works.
That works for me. That's pretty good. That's not bad at all. So it definitely pays to, if you don't have to stay in the slip, you save a lot of money by not doing that. But it was a great trip. So the show notes will have all the links to all the anchorages, all the tiki bars, all the restaurants, and we'll include some videos, pictures, and maps from the trip. So definitely look at the show notes and the post on our website at thesailingroad.com. And up next, we'll cover the sailing news. Stay tuned. We're back and we're going to talk about the sailing news, some interesting stories that I've come across. So the first one is about the sailing industry and where it stands these days. Is it growing? Is it shrinking? And the fact is that the sailing industry has had much better days. With the aging baby boomers, they say, are turning towards power boats, and the millennials are looking at other types of options. They just really haven't got into sailing. Sailing as a sport and as a recreation has actually been roughly flat in growth for about a decade. And it says, according to this article, 3.5 to 4 million people are going sailing at least once a year, and 1.2 million people are sailing 7 times a year. So those are the regular sailors like us. That's a pretty small, according to the percentage of the United States. And it's definitely been hit by the recession. We all know that all the recreational areas, especially in boats or luxury boats, got hit with recession. But they said that this was happening even before the recession hit and that the sailboat business had been declining for a number of years. They also said in the article that some of the sailing clubs are really having a hard time supporting membership. the Gulfstream Sailing Club in Fort Lauderdale said their membership is down 90%, off more than half from its peak decades back. The sailing clubs are getting hit. They said the millennials, one of the guys was quoted, millennials really aren't taking up sailing now. They're put off by the cost of dockage and insurance for large boats. And this guy says, I see them up and down the canals and kayaks, but they're not getting into sailing just because of the higher cost, and they're looking for having a lot more options in their recreation time. So they have some sales figures in here on sailboat sales. And in 2014, Sailboat Brokers North America reported sales of $463 million, which were roughly flat year to year. It says the North American sailboat production last year hit its highest level since 2008, but the roughly 7,000 sailboats produced still lag far behind the 22,000 plus that were made in the year 2000. So that's a huge difference, 7,000 to at the peak in the year 2000, 22,000 were made. So we're still a long way down from back in the early 2000s. I mean, they're really saying that the industry as a whole just really needs some marketing help. They need to get the younger people in. So if you know some kids in the neighborhood, take them out sailing. We've found that people that we take out sailing that have never been sailing before have really found that they enjoy it. And they even our son, the more he spent time sailing now, he's really got into it and enjoying it. The one statistic in here that I thought was really interesting is that no one ever expects the sailing to get back to the heydays of the 70s. And that's when, back in the 70s, they say that 12 million Americans sailed at least once a year. And if you remember back at the beginning of the story, I said that right now, 3.5 to 4 million people sail at least once a year. So we're down a quarter of what it was in the 70s when I started sailing with my dad and being part of our yacht club up in Michigan. So just a huge hit to the industry. So like I said, if you know some young people, take them out sailing, get your kids into little dinghy races and things like that. It's a great sport. We just got to get more people interested in it to support the industry as a whole. So the next story I have is that Jimmy Buffett, the singer, Jimmy Buffett of Margaritaville, has decided on a new sailboat that he's getting built, and it is going to be the Safari 44. It's going to be built.
And I'm his first mate.
Yeah? You're going to go for a sail in it? Hopefully Jimmy will invite us along. Maybe I can play my ukulele to Margaritaville with him, so that would be fun. So Jimmy, if you're listening to this, we'd definitely like to go for a ride on your new yacht when it gets finished. But the Safari 44 is going to be built by Friendship Yacht Company, and it is being designed by naval architect Edward Ted Fontaine and being built by Pacific Seacraft in North Carolina. And it's a pretty cool looking boat. You'll see pictures in the show notes of it. And they set it up to be kind of a home away from home for Jimmy Buffett. And it's very outdoor sports oriented. When you look at it, really has this huge upper level of the boat that almost has a pilot house type look, and then open all the way to the back, and the entire rear transom folds down. It has a 11.5-foot wide tailgate that flips down so you can take sailboards right off the back of the boat or swim right back off the boat. The other thing I found interesting about the boat is that it's made to be high performance both in sailing and in motoring, and it has twin 75 horsepower auxiliary engines. So for a 4-foot sailboat, even with the keel with 75 horsepower engines, it doesn't say in here how fast they calculate it's going to motor, but I got to imagine that you can get upwards of probably
fast, right?
13, 14, 15 knots with two twin 75.
Them.
Yeah. They may actually be able to beat us. I don't know. But it's a really cool looking boat. So definitely look at the show notes and you'll see pictures of that. The next article I came across that I thought was pretty interesting is everybody's familiar with Google Street View. And you've probably even been driving along and maybe saw a Google car that's driving along with all the cameras on its roof, taking pictures of all the roads so that we can navigate and have all these great pictures in Google Maps. Well, they're taking that technology to the waterways now, and they've been doing the roads since 2007, but they just started recently actually doing waterways. It initially started as a pilot program on the Amazon River, and then they added the waterways, the US and Europe, and it'll eventually have all this completely imaged, so you'll have full print panoramas. They're actually testing out a robot or drone boat that will image the coastline of San Francisco Bay. They say the program will essentially give boaters access to the waterways for their dream destinations, even if only virtually. So even if you're not a boater, you could kind of virtually, like you do now, drive down a street. You could virtually drive a boat around and see the waterways of the world. So I thought that'd be interesting. The problem is I can see the geeks of the world getting into this and going out in their boats with virtual reality glasses and decide that they can navigate by this instead of reality and be running into people and other things. So hopefully people won't use it for the wrong things. They'll depend on their wits and common sense. And another high-tech story that I came across is this ocean-crossing autonomous trimaran that they've created. And it's going to be called the Mayflower Autonomous Research Ship, codenamed Mars, uses state-of-the-art wind and solar technology to propulsion, enabling an unlimited range. And the boat is actually fairly sizable. It's 106 feet long by 55 feet wide, and it has all carbon fiber, all this great technology. It can use one or two of its sails to go at a speed up to 20 knots. So this thing can fly. And on less breezy days, when the sails are not powering it, it has solar power, and it can travel up to 12 and a half knots under power. And it says the solar cells should be able to generate enough current that if it's traveling at 5 knots, it could pretty much go unlimited at that speed. So they're going to use this for a number of research projects. It's actually built to have these drone bays built into it. So at any given time during its voyage, it can release other little autonomous boats that can go out and collect research data. And sounds like a great project. It'd be interesting when you're sailing along, all of a sudden you see a boat sail by and you're mad that it's beating you and you're trying to race it and you keep looking over and you don't see anybody actually sailing it. It's just completely autonomous. Kind of hard to beat a robot probably, but I thought that was interesting. And the last story I had after all that high tech, all those high tech stories, is that after 20 years, the Naval Academy is bringing back celestial navigation to the classroom. I guess it was over 20 years ago that the last class at the Naval Academy learned celestial navigation, which really surprises me. They say the renewed focus has nothing to do with just wanting to get back to classical navigation, but it actually has to do with an emerging cybersecurity threat. It was quoted in here, Lieutenant Commodore Ryan Rogers was quoted as saying, "We went away from celestial navigation because computers are great. The problem is there's no backup." And so what they're worried about is cybersecurity wiping out navigation on a ship and them being able to still be able to function and use classical navigation. You know, it doesn't mean that, I guess in the article here, it says it doesn't mean that midshipmen are going to be the Horatio Hornblowers of the 21st century. Instruction currently is going to be limited to 3 hours and at just really basic theory. So even though they're going to be getting it at the Naval Academy, it looks like it's going to be for 3 hours. From what I know of celestial navigation, it's pretty complicated to learn. So I doubt they're going to get much out of it. But they did say that for the fleet naval forces, celestial navigation was reinstated for ship navigators in 2011. So at least all the Navy ship navigators that are out there since 2011 have been learning celestial navigation, and they're planning to get all the enlisted ranks to learn it soon. So there'll be somebody on the ship that knows how to do it. They went through some of the other maritime areas and whether or not they have it. I guess the Coast Guard ended its celestial navigation courses a decade ago, although some cadets still use sextants during their training on the tall ship Eagle that they go on. But so I guess the Coast Guard isn't using celestial navigation anymore. The Merchant Marine Academy has continuously taught celestial navigation since the start, and they're actually helping the Naval Academy rebuild its program, so they've been brought back in to help. It's one of those things that I'd like to learn. I'm going to definitely, when we start cruising and doing more offshore, I want to get a sextant and see how accurate I can be, just as a challenge, like a puzzle, to see if I'm, I'll read off my coordinates and you'll look at the GPS and say, you're in East Africa.
You're back at home.
We're off the coast of Bermuda and you're thinking we're in Africa. So we'll see how that goes. So we're going to take a quick break, and up next is our product of the week. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back, and we are going to talk about our product of the week. And this week, our product of the week is a crucial item that we have on our boat. Probably one of the most important items. We talked about it a lot in this podcast about how important it is to get us from our anchorage back to shore. And that is our dinghy.
Dinghy boat.
Or as Brandy would call it, the dinghy boat. So, we looked at a number of different options when we first started sailing to get a dinghy. And I actually got a dinghy from one of my renters had this inflatable dinghy he was going to get rid of. And we used it for a couple years, had a slow leak in it.
A couple slow leaks in it.
But it worked for us.
Nothing that a hand pump won't fix.
At some point, we decided it was just time to upgrade it because we used it so much. And we ended up, because we liked it so much and it worked so well, it was really durable other than a couple of leaks. It was slow leaks. We went out and bought a brand new version of it. And that boat is the Intex Mariner 3 boat. We went out and bought a brand new one, and it has no leaks.
Thank goodness.
I think that it had leaks.
I think we'd be sending it back if it had leaks. Yeah,
the old one had leaks before, and it had been sitting out in the sun a long time, I think, before I got it. But this one is very durable, very well built. We've put it up on the Amazon store. So these go for $193 with free shipping. So for $193 to have a 10-foot dinghy, really durable rubber dinghy, and we just row it everywhere.
And I'm looking at this right here, and we don't really use those. The seats are removable inside. They're just little
blow-up seats
that you can put in or put out or leave out or whatever. And we leave them out, but, it probably would be handy to actually use those.
We never use
those
seats.
When you're rowing, you always have the life jacket underneath your knees, but you could sit on a lovely seat and be more comfortable.
I don't know. For some reason, I like to row on my when I'm kneeling.
We might have to check that out.
We might try it. So it's a 10-foot long by 4-foot wide dinghy. It's supposed to be, I guess, about a 3-person dinghy. It's got a 660-pound limit, and it comes with oars. It comes with a blow-up thing. We actually use an electric pump on ours to blow it up and then tighten it up with the hand pump. The oars are locked in the middle with a plastic piece, and so you'll notice if you really crank on them, you hear them creaking a little bit. They're actually fairly strong. We've never had an issue with them, but we've always also had an extra plastic piece. You just order those off of the Intex site. Just a nice to have a backup, and we've never really worried about it. So on our store, I posted the Intex Mariner 3. I also posted the Intex Mariner 4. If somebody wanted a little bit bigger one, there's the exact same boat. It's just a 4-person instead of a 3-person. We find the 3-person to be fine. We've jammed 4 people in it before and never had a problem. But
Not us and the boys.
Yeah. But the 4-person is $231 with free shipping, and it has an 880-pound limit. It's about 13 feet long and 5 foot wide. You got either option. I put them both up on the store, but we found this to be really durable. We think, as much as we use it, which is probably 40 days a year, it would last us easily 5 years, if not more, because we don't leave it out in the sun. It's always packed away. We found it to be very durable, really well built, and think that people would get a lot of use out of it. We've never bothered putting a motor on it. It rows easy.
Steve is our motor.
Yeah. It's good exercise for me to get us back, back and forth to shore.
We're usually not that far off of shore that it's motor needed. So once we actually start cruising for longer periods of time,
then
the motor would definitely come in handy.
But we've never found a time when, even when the wind was blowing offshore, it just takes a little bit longer to row in, but we don't.
Slow and steady wins the race.
The great thing about our shallow draft, too, is we're not usually anchored that far offshore. But the other problem in Florida, where we live, anything with a motor, no matter what size it is, has to be registered. So it's just one more thing to pay the state for a license fee. So we've bothered with it. So that's our product of the week. Our dinghy boat. Definitely take a look at it. If you don't have a dinghy, it's a cheap way to get in into shore. So that's it for this week. If you guys can help us out, one of the things we want to ask for, everybody's been given iTunes reviews, that's great, but where you can really help us out now is spreading the word about the podcast. I've investigated a little bit more about iTunes, and it's actually subscribers that help us the most in ratings. And just getting the word out, we want people to listen, and it's just hard to, you know, get people to understand what a podcast is. So the best way is the people that are listening right now that enjoy it, get out there this week, talk to a sailor you know, tell them how much you're enjoying the show, show them how to access it on their phone or on their computer, how to download it. A lot of people just don't understand podcasts. And then hit that subscribe button, and that really helps us out. It spreads the news. If you're on a forum, a sailing forum, on, you know, Facebook friends with people, a yacht club, whatever, just spread the word for us. That's the best way you can help us out. And just think about it. You know, these people are driving and having boring commutes every day, listen to the radio. You could help them out.
Talk to each other when they could be listening to us.
That's true. Yeah. But they could enjoy a wonderful sailing program and just dream about sailing while they're having boring commutes or exercising rather than listening to boring radio. So help us out and get out there and spread the word. We really appreciate it. And then you can check on our YouTube channel. We're always posting videos out. You'll see a new video go up with this episode about our trip. So check that out. We're also on Instagram and Facebook. So like us out there. And go out and check out the website so you can see all the show notes on thesailingroad.com. And you'll see the post on this episode and share that with other people. And while you're there, get on our email list. I'm starting to send out updates on what we're doing and a little newsletter with any updates on the site and other things. We'll figure out something special to do for the virtual yacht club once you sign up there. It doesn't cost anything.
Just email us at crew@thesailingroad.com, crew@thesailingroad.com. We love your emails, especially our Ronco Pocket Fisherman emailed us the other day. He received it and let us know that he is enjoying casting the line at the cat in the living room right now.
Yeah, he got in trouble.
Absolutely hilarious.
His wife yelled at him because
he was very fond of that.
He was using his Ronco Pocket Fisherman to try and catch the cat.
It was great to hear that he received it and is enjoying it in his own little way right now. So soon send us some pictures of what you catch actually with that pocket fisherman.
Yeah. But we definitely love to hear from everybody, so definitely send us an email. And you can really help support the podcast by using our Amazon store. I added some more items out there this week. There's over 90 items out there that we use and test on our boat all the time. The dinghies are out there on the front page that I just mentioned, and we put little descriptions on each one, how we use it, why we like it. Holidays are coming up. Start shopping out there. Find some great items. We know that any sailor or boater that you know would really enjoy some of these items and put them to good use on their boat. And anything you buy on Amazon, if you'll use our Amazon link, we get a small commission from Amazon. So just go to thesailingroad.com/Amazon, thesailingroad.com/Amazon, and we'll get a small commission if you buy anything after going through that link. And that's it. So if you have any show ideas, suggestions for people to interview, or just to say hello, please email us crew@thesailingroad.com. And we really thank you for listening, and we hope to see you on the water soon.
See you, everybody.